Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Haunted History with Asher Brooks, and I am your host, Asher Brooks. If you've never listened to this before, this is a show about the spooky, the silly, and the strange sections of history. Today we have a special guest with us, an amateur historian, philosopher, and over 100 wins in Fortnite. Here to lend his combat experience and military knowledge is Raffy Phillips.
Hello, thank you for having me.
But today's episode, we're talking about two stories from the biggest wars in history. The attack of the dead men and the farting Fuhrer. Fuhrer? How do I say that, Raffy?
Yeah, Fuhrer.
Fuhrer? Okay, fantastic. So, with the attack of the dead men, I specifically came into this cold. I didn't do any research to learn about what this is. But you gave me a little bit of knowledge about it a while back when we first started talking about doing this.
Yeah, so it's one of the most prolific sightings of zombies in history.
There are zombies in this story?
Zombies, technically.
Zombies with air quotes?
Yeah.
I was like, look, I played Call of Duty. I know they were Nazi zombies, but this is World War I, right?
Yeah.
So there's no Nazi zombies here.
Maybe Russian zombies.
Maybe though. Russian zombies. So what do you mean by zombies? Because are zombies
you'll
real?
See. You'll
is
see.
This how I find out?
So it all starts in 1914, right? You have Germany, an industrial superpower.
Okay.
And then Russia, who's kind of a backwater, very not industrialized, and that comes in later. So, the war breaks out for reasons.
Yes, Archduke Ferdinand.
Yeah, he gets shot.
He gets shot. A bunch of Archdukes get shot, yeah.
Yeah, but so Germany pushes in, right? And they reach this fortress called Auschwitz Fortress.
Auschwitz Fortress?
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. It is in Russian. If any of our listeners are Russian, we're sorry.
Yeah. So, Germany did multiple assaults on this fortress, and they just could not get it, right? And so, like, a year goes by, and gas warfare started, in, you know, a few months back. So, they try to gas the fortress, right? And this is extremely effective, because Russia, due to their previously mentioned, you know, lack of industry, did not have gas masks at this time.
So all these people are in this, like, concrete fortress, there's no gas masks, and then the Germans are just lobbing these grenades over the walls, and it's just filling this whole place up.
Oh, yeah, they're shooting massive artillery guns just super far away.
Okay, so not even close to it. They're just gassing this place from, you know, hundreds of yards away.
And they outnumber the Russian defenders like 8-1.
Okay.
Because there's like 1,000 Russians, half of which are just militiamen.
Okay, so not even fully trained soldiers.
No.
They're just, you know, reserves.
Probably poorly equipped as well, since of the supply issues. And, yeah, there's like 8,000 Germans who are just gassing this, right? The gas they use is very hard to find because it's just like a bunch of different gases. Because like there's mustard gas, chlorine gas, bromine in there somewhere.
Bromine gas. So we don't know which gas they're actually using on them, or
no,
it's just like
it's just
a combination.
All of those. They're just,
Oh no.
And they don't have gas masks, right? So there's this like there's the fortress, and then in front of that there's like this big trench system, right? Because you know, the Eastern Front didn't really have that many trenches, except, you know, in, like, permanent fortifications, right?
Yes, yes. So anything that was previously built, they established trenches for, but
yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, what most of World War One was, which were these big, hastily constructed trenches.
Yeah.
Okay, I get you.
So, they gassed the front position, you know, like the trenches and stuff.
Yes.
And due to the no gas masks.
It's very effective?
Yeah, because, like, you know, the gas that was used isn't exactly known, because, you know, it was all the gases. But what it did, it, like, rashes, just burns, like, chemical burns, vomiting blood.
Oh, okay. Great. And so this isn't going to be a light episode.
Cool.
No. Starting out strong.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it killing them, or is it just horrifically maiming them?
Both.
Both. So, horrific maiming, then death. I mean, so, just a quick way, I don't know if you know this. So, if, say, I'm in a trench, and I get hit with gas, right? Do I take 2 breaths of this gas, I realize I'm in trouble, can I scramble out and run, or am I done for?
No, because they specifically designed, you know, gas to try and be dense, so that it would float along the ground, and then seep into trenches.
Yeah.
So you could try to run away, but it would eventually find you again.
That's awful. Yeah. But no, but like I climb out of a trench and I get to high ground.
And then you get shot.
Oh, so it's designed to literally flush them out. You stay in the trench, you dive gas, you pop out, and then they just pop you with guns because they... Okay.
Yeah.
So there's no escape for these
people.
There's
no good options.
Okay.
So, you know, they do what they can, right? You know, try to get bandages and stuff, and then they get, like, pushed back further and further, right? And then, you know, once the gas attack kind of stops, Germany sends in their troops, right? And, you know, they don't really find anyone except dead bodies, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just, like, kind of looking around, kind of confused. When Vladimir Karpovich, a lieutenant leading the, like, defenders, makes, like, you know, coordinates an excellent counterattack. Where, let me just paint you a picture of what the Germans saw. So, you know, you're a German soldier in a trench. You know, you've been, you know, at war for a long time.
Yeah, I've got a little picture of a blonde-haired woman holding a beer in my in my coat pocket.
And you see hundreds of violently vomiting soldiers running at you.
So they're charging from, like, what, a position inside the trench? They're coming over, they're just coming from the city? They're coming across the fortress walls?
Yeah.
All of the above?
Yeah, so, like, there's some people in the trench that start running, and then there's some people in the fortress that come out and start running. And it's just, like, this massive, like, not wall, but it's just, like, a horde of people.
So I'm a German soldier. I've got my rifle, and I look around. I just see a bunch of dead bodies, but I don't see enough dead bodies.
Yeah.
And I look up, and all those people who do look dead are charging?
Yes.
Okay.
And here's where it gets, like, real brutal, right?
Okay.
So once these, like, people start charging over, right, they're... self-preservation instincts are gone. So, like, there's, like, you know, reports of, you know, Russian soldiers stabbing a German soldier with a bayonet, violently vomiting blood on him and, like, lungs, and then pulling the bayonet out and continuing.
Okay, I'm about to put a content warning on this episode.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. Great. Fantastic. So they... I guess my question, something I was trying to ask earlier, so the gas doesn't kill you immediately.
No. It's like a slow burn, but it does make it very painful and hard to, like, move.
So you're definitely, you're going to die if you get this gas in you unless you get treated really quickly.
No, not exactly. But it's just, you'll die eventually of, like, not being able to breathe.
Complications. It's just going to burn you from the inside out, and then you're going to collapse because your lungs aren't working properly.
Yeah, or like
so you've got time.
You've got
incredibly painful time.
Yeah.
But time. And so that's what these soldiers are doing. They're So they're stabbing people, dying, vomiting up their lungs, and coughing up blood.
Yeah.
And then just like, well, I guess I got some stabbing to do before I die.
Yeah.
Because I guess the best case scenario is you take out a couple of Germans and then somebody shoots you and then...
Because, like, if you're in the fortress, you're going to die anyways. Might as well charge and have a chance of living.
That's true. Might as well... Yeah,
that's really, like, the thought that, you know, is playing, right? And so the Germans legitimately thought that they were fighting dead... people who had come back to life just to stab them.
They've come back just to stab us.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, because you got to hear screams and...
Oh,
and, like, crying.
Vomiting and coughing and, like... Yeah. And what makes that worse is that most soldiers were wearing, like, some kind of face coverage or bandage on their face, right? To help with, like, the smoke.
Oh, so, yeah, they're not wearing gas masks, but they've got, like, bandanas, they've got
stuff
across
their... Doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, but it makes them feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, they're almost all covered in blood.
So, just a bunch of people with dripping, bloody face masks, face coverings, are running at you and stabbing you.
With, like, facial scars and burns and...
Oh.
Yeah.
So it does. It looks like hell has opened up and all the men they killed have come back to take their vengeance.
Yes.
So do the Germans rout? Do they run?
Oh, they see the people coming, they start getting stabbed, and it causes a mass rout where they just all leave, right?
They just all turn and run?
Oh, like 8,000 of them just... They just turn around. Not worth it.
It's like, we don't need this fortress.
Yeah.
We don't need it. It's inhabited by zombies. It's good. We're good. And so, like, so how many defenders were there total?
There was like 900.
900 men rout 8,000.
Yeah. Like, not all of them would be on the front lines.
No, of course.
They all did leave and didn't come back.
They didn't come back. So the Germans rout, how many of them, like, ended up getting stabbed in these trenches? Or did they just retake the forward position?
The numbers on this are extremely goofy, right? Because, like, even for the charge itself, right, it ranges from 60 people,
60 people
to, like, hundreds.
Hundreds. So either 60 or 600 Germans were killed in this charge.
Yeah.
I wonder how many Germans, like... Because, you know, desertion is a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, because people get tired of war, they can't do it anymore, so they just run. How many Germans do you think, after the charge of the zombies from hell, how many Germans do you think were just like, this is not worth it. I don't need this. And just deserted, and that's why the numbers are so funky.
Yeah.
Because they're like, we'd rather report this guy was killed in action than that he just turned tail and ran.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, but... So, they win, right?
Yeah.
Like, the Russians win. And basically everyone who is in the fortress is wounded in some capacity.
Oh, right? Yeah. Burns, chemically. I'm sure many of them just kind of dropped dead in the days following.
For sure. But the saddest part about all this...
Okay.
2 weeks later, they have to evacuate the fortress because it was being encircled.
So the Germans, 6,000 Germans, they run, 8,000 Germans, 8,000. However many survive, they run back to high command. They say, hey, this fortress full of absolutely crazy people or zombies, we're not sure which, we're not going back in there. And so the Germans have to take all these troops and circle the fortress.
Yeah.
And they're just going to starve the zombies out.
Yeah, so then they had to,
evacuate.
And then, oh, there's the fortress after 2 weeks.
So 2 weeks after the charge of these mad zombies.
Yeah.
The fortress is like, well, I guess we just give up. We gotta pull back or we're gonna lose. Golly.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder, what happened to the lieutenant? Did he ever make it?
Oh, he's dead.
He's dead?
He died in the battle.
Oh, he died in the battle. Yeah. I was gonna say it is 2022, almost 2023. Happy New Year, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up, and Merry Christmas, because this is our Christmas episode. Yeah. We could have done something on Christmas, I suppose, but this is our Christmas episode. Hope you enjoy vomiting soldiers. Okay, so World War I. So where is this in the timeline of World War I? So is this towards the end or
15? It was at the very beginning.
Very beginning.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being a German soldier hearing reports like, here the Russians have zombies on their team? Zombies? No, I'm done. We can make peace. It's very easy.
Yeah, so not good. But, and then there's a second new lieutenant who also died in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
So, mass casualties, and then, lose fortress.
Help me, maybe this is just a personal question.
Yeah.
Where is a lieutenant in military rankings? Because I understand there's, like, private, which is, like, the lowest. Yeah. And then there's, like, classes, and then you get... Where is a lieutenant? Is a lieutenant under a general? Under a captain?
Modern day, right?
Yeah.
A lieutenant is a lot different than it was in, like, World War I Russia, right?
Okay.
So a lieutenant is, like, he can lead, like, a few brigades, essentially.
How many men are in a brigade?
It's like 100 to like 100, like 200, somewhere around that.
So the lieutenant would be in charge of maybe like the 900 men that are in this fortress.
Yeah, so two of them, probably like 450 each of them.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was a decent commander. He certainly wasn't a general, but he was in charge. I love that he was like, we're not losing this fortress.
Yeah.
We're not losing this fortress. Get you fix your bayonets, boys. We're charging.
Yeah.
Delicious, delicious water. All right. Well, that was horrible. That was horrible, yeah. Raffy, and I loved it.
It's not good.
That was horrible. No, but in a way, you know, that good for them, I suppose. Good for them. Well, I guess we'll transition to the next topic now, which is a little bit lighter. Not super light, because it has to do with Hitler. But, you know, it's a little bit lighter. So, I guess I'll just start this off with you. So, did you ever suffer from gas?
Occasionally.
Did you ever pass gas? It's embarrassing when you pass gas,
right? Yeah.
Did you know that Hitler farted almost constantly?
I did not.
Almost constantly, this man farted. It was a huge problem. And there's a reason a lot of people don't know about it. It's because he was very embarrassed.
As I think anyone would be.
As anyone would be. He was very embarrassed about it, so he did a lot of work to try and cover it up. He worked very hard, so he'd had this since he was a kid. And there are many reports. So a lot of the information that I got here comes from, his doctors were captured after the war, and they were interrogated.
Yeah.
And so a lot of this information came out after the war, because during the war, obviously, if the Americans had known that Hitler farted constantly, there were songs I was researching. We were talking about this a little before the podcast started. There is a song that the British used to sing called Hitler Has Only One Ball, which was based on a very weak rumor that Hitler has, like, one testicle, and so they would sing it because it was funny. If they had known that he farted like a racehorse...
they would have such a good day in, like, the propaganda department.
Captain America, you know those scenes in Captain America where he's, like, punching out Hitler?
Yeah.
That would have always ended with, like, punch, fart noise. So, he does a lot of work to keep this hidden. It's been a problem since he's a kid. And so apparently it gets worse with stress, right? So it's psychosomatic.
Oh, that's so much worse.
It is. It is really sad. I have psychosomatic problems. So like when I get upset or stressed out, I get nauseous occasionally. Yeah. And it's due to the fact that I had a lot of like, nauseous sickness when I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to get into the funness of that. But like, because when I was really sick, I was really anxious about it.
Yeah.
So that anxiety and that nausea are tied. And so, for some reason, his farting and his anxiety, his stress levels are tied. If you hear any noises, dear listeners, that is my cat, Biscuits. Just want to let you know, neither one of us is wearing a bell. I tried to get Raffy to wear one. He wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not up for that.
He's not up for that. So, let me take another drink here. Delicious. That's the content you guys pay for, ladies and gentlemen. So Hitler has this big problem with farting, and he tries to solve it himself. So when he's a kid, and when he's a young adult, he's getting more and more popular. People know he went to art school, got kicked out of art school, things like that. All this time, he's dealing with his farting problems. But as he starts to rise to political power, he's like, I've got to handle this. I'm not going to do a German accent. But he's like, I've got to handle this. So he starts doing a couple of strange things. First thing he does, he switches to a vegetarian diet. So a lot of people know that Hitler was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Although, like, I think it was, like, PETA did a thing that was, like, they've come out once or twice and been like, Hitler wasn't a vegetarian. Because they're vegetarians. Yeah, like, PETA so stands as you should be kind to animals.
Disconnect them.
They want to disconnect from it. Hey, Hitler also loved animals.
Yeah, he was an animal rights activist.
He was an animal rights activist, which was crazy, because they did a lot of nasty, like, animal experiments as well.
Yeah, they killed a bunch of horses.
They did kill a bunch of horses, and a bunch of people. But as we've covered in this podcast before, we do not hurt animals. But anyway, so Hitler starts doing a vegetarian diet. So he gives up meat, butter, milk, all these rich foods. So anything really tasty, anything really good, he's like, I can't eat anymore. So he basically just eats vegetables and whole grains. His breakfast, like, as the leader of the German nation, a couple of decades later, like, as the leader of the German nation, he's eating porridge for breakfast and dry toast. Orange juice, dry toast, and oatmeal.
No wonder he's so angry.
No wonder he's got rage problems, right?
Yeah.
Although we'll talk about a little bit later why he might be a little bit more ragey than usual. So he puts himself on this vegetarian diet, and he does this because he's like, all these rich foods are making my stomach upset. Not thinking that, wow, if I start eating a lot of, like, fiber and vegetables and beans, I'm going to fart even more. So it has an effect. It's vegetarian diet. So he doesn't smell as bad anymore.
Yeah, that's
because he's not eating the things that make his fart smell bad, but he's farting even more than before. And so he's like, this is not going well. So he tries his next thing, And this is all in the privacy of his home, right? Yeah. He does not trust doctors. He's very paranoid.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not, he doesn't even get a doctor until he becomes, like, the Chancellor of Germany.
Yeah.
Like, he does not ask for, you know, help from a doctor or anything like this. So he starts giving himself enemas, and not just regular enemas. He starts giving himself chamomile enemas. And I won't go into what an enema is, because there's no reason to do so. Yeah. Suffice it to say, it is a way to clean your colon with water using an external source, yeah, right? It is very uncomfortable to do.
Yeah.
It requires a lot of bending. And so he starts making, like, a bunch of chamomile tea, and then putting it into an enema bottle, and then giving himself enemas, because he thought it would soothe his bowels, right? Because his bowel, yeah, like, his stomach, he's got a blitzkrieg in his butt right now, and he's just trying to solve it. But he can't. None of this is working. And it's, so his farting is getting worse and worse because he's getting more politically powerful. He's going through more and more stress,
yeah,
right? He's having all these big, like, speeches he's had to give. He's, you know, he's consolidating power. He's doing all these horrible things.
Yeah.
And he's a bad person. And I'm glad that he was having stomach problems. At, yeah, the very least, I'm glad that was happening to him. But it's just increasing his stress levels to a point where it's almost constant.
Yeah.
Right? So he becomes Chancellor of Germany. He's got all these dinner parties he's got to attend. It is reported he often would flee from dinner parties. Like, he would be at a dinner party, he would be eating, he would be talking to everyone, and then just in the middle of the party, he would just kind of stand up from the table, turn around, and just walk straight into his room. And people would be like, where did Hitler go? And, you know, whoever was kind of, like, secondary hosting the event was like, I don't know. He's been, because Hitler was like, if you tell anyone that I'm in,
I will shoot you.
Yeah, I will shoot you. You think I'm bad to my enemies. Yeah. I will tell. So he's got these terrible gas problems he's dealing with in his room in private. Yeah. He's also, it's upgraded at this point. He's now dealing with both constipation and diarrhea. Right? So he's just
leveled up.
He leveled up. Well, he's just swiveling from one to the other, right?
Yeah.
So he's always passing gas. He's either constipated or he's, you know, he's got diarrhea. Well, he's got one or the other at all times, basically. And so he's dealing with this. He finally, at a Christmas party, in, I believe, the early 1930s, he meets this person called Dr. Theodore Morell. Morell is not a good guy. Not a good person. So he gets introduced to him because his personal photographer, Hitler's personal photographer, gets cured by Morell. Because Morell, this doctor, is a quack. He's not a good doctor. He's a bad doctor. He actually has a medical license. Oh, he was a ship's doctor in World War I, right? And he was, yeah, a physician. But once he got done with that, he sets up this practice, this doctor's office, on this very fashionable street.
Yeah.
And so he only serves, like, singers and high-profile people. People who have mostly... He specifically goes for these people who have, like, psychosomatic problems.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, nausea and anxiety. Things that can be usually solved with, like, just kind of talking it out.
Yeah.
Right? But what he does is, instead of saying, hey, I'm your therapist, right? I'm just going to help you therapy this out. He goes, I'm going to help you. And then he prescribes them all these pills that he's created, right? He's like, this is going to solve your problem.
Oh, no.
Try this. And then when it works, because it's an illness that can be solved with, you know,
just human communication.
You know what I mean? It's like these powerful people or these famous people who are like, yeah, I have a bad skin. My skin is getting bad. Like, he was apparently very good at treating eczema. Like,
I mean, that's cool.
Which is good. No, but he wasn't a good doctor. He was just, yeah, like, yeah, I mean, I've got calamine lotion. You know what I mean? So he starts attracting these high-profile people. So it gets him into the room with Hitler's photographer. Hitler's photographer has some sort of skin condition. And so Hitler's photographer is like, oh, great. You know, this doctor over here, he helped me with my medical thing. He helped me with my skin condition. And so he introduces Hitler to Dr. Morell. And Hitler is so desperate at this point. So desperate. Tooting all the time. Just constantly passing gas. He finally pours his heart out to this Dr. Morell. And he goes, I'm just passing gas all the time. It's a huge problem. I don't know what to do. And Morell says, I got you covered, baby. I can solve this right now. And so Hitler was also suffering from eczema. He's got eczema, yeah, on his, like, the front of his shins. And so Morell goes, first off, let me just go ahead. I can take care of that. Gives him some ointment for his eczema and says, as for your gas, I can solve that by the end of the year. No problem. And so Hitler says, all right, let's do this. And so he prescribes him these anti-gas pills that we will talk about in a little bit. We'll come back to those. He also prescribes him a medicine that he creates. This is one of these pills that he builds. So it's something called Mutaflor, which is a... So at this time, probiotics were not used. Like, they understood at this point that, like, you're... Inside your gut, there were bacteria, right? So inside your stomach, there are bacteria that process the food that you eat and things like that. Yeah. So they knew that there were good bacteria and bad bacteria. And if you have too many bad bacteria, your stomach doesn't work right. And so Dr. Morell is a proponent of this idea that if we take enzymes from someone who is a healthy living person, right? So someone who works hard and eats just like vegetables and like lean meat and stuff like that. So he goes out to this Bulgarian countryside. He gets poop from a bunch of peasant farmers, right?
Peak of society.
Well, people that... Because at the time, people thought, oh, we're drinking and smoking too much. We need to go back to the way things were. We need to go back to just... We were pulling onions out of the ground and just biting them. You know, stuff like
that. Yeah, we gotta get our manliness
back. It's crazy how these ideas just keep circling back. Yeah. But anyway, so he goes and he gets Bulgarian peasant poop. He takes it back and he extracts these enzymes from it, these bacteria from it. So he basically makes poop pills. He makes these poop pills. He gives them to Hitler and he's like, you need to take one of these a day. You need to take three of these a day. And it's like a combination of pills and things like that. So he gives him this Mutaflor. And about this time, Hitler gets through this very stressful time, right? So we know that Hitler's problems are psychosomatic.
Yeah.
Dr. Morell has prescribed him this medicine. Those things happen at the same time. The medicine and then this end of this stressful time come for Hitler. Yeah. And so the farting gets a little bit better. Not gone.
Yeah.
Just it gets better at the same time this medicine is administered to him. The eczema goes away at the same time. And Hitler, bedazzled.
Yeah.
He's like, you're the best doctor I've ever had in my life. You're the only doctor I trust. I actually have a quote. From Hitler. Give me one second. Nobody has ever told me before so clearly and precisely what is wrong with me. His method of cure is so logical, I have the greatest confidence in him. I shall follow his prescription to the letter. Morell became Hitler's personal physician.
He didn't even trust his generals that much.
He didn't trust his generals. He didn't trust anyone. This quack doctor that he met at a Christmas party... who was like, try some calamine lotion, and how about some anti-gas pills for your farting? And just goes, you're my man, you're my boy, taking it to the end, you're coming to the Führer bunker with me, and takes him. And so Morell becomes a part of Hitler's inner circle immediately, and loves it. He starts marketing all of his stuff to all these different people in Hitler's inner circle.
He just, like, got the cheat code for, like... he just monopolized the German health office.
Yeah, he got real lucky. He made millions of Reichsmarks selling all of his different things because he's like, I'm Hitler's personal physician. Come buy my crystals. you know, stuff like that. Things he knew was going to work.
He stamps, like, Hitler approved on everything.
So everybody... in Hitler's inner circle, hates Morell. Yeah. Everyone. Eva Braun, Geiring, I'm going to say these names wrong, Hermann Göring. Yeah. So all these different people, everyone in Hitler's inner circle, hates Morell. Not only is it clear to everyone in his inner circle that he's a quack, right? It's clear to everyone but Hitler, this man is just making things up.
Yeah.
He also smells horrible. Reportedly, this Dr. Morell, didn't clean his fingernails, didn't wash his hair. He had long, greasy hair. He had nasty fingernails. He bathed very infrequently. He apparently didn't brush his teeth. I saw one description of him. They said he had venomous halitosis, which is, halitosis is like the medical term for like bad breath. Everybody hated him. And they told Hitler this. They're like, hey, your doctor, like, he smells awful. We don't like him. He's, like, very large, and, like, he clearly doesn't take care of himself. He's, like, overweight, and he smells bad. And so people keep telling him, they're like, hey, we don't like your doctor. He smells really bad. Hitler reportedly says, this is a quote, another Hitler quote, I don't employ him for his fragrance. I employ him to look after my health. So it's fine.
That's like the only person he's ever defended.
The only person he's ever defended. Absolutely. No, he just goes, he's like, okay, great, fantastic. I don't care if he smells bad. That's great. He's just here to talk. He's just here to, you know.
Yeah.
He's here to take care of me. So there's this person in Hitler's inner circle called Albert Speer, who he gets sick. He has some stomach issues as well. And Hitler insists. He goes, you got to go to my guy. Got to go to my dude. Got to go to Morell. And Speer's like, I don't really want to. And Hitler's like, but I'm the supreme leader, so
You better get going.
I got you an appointment. So he goes to this doctor's office. And here's a quote from him. After a superficial examination, Morell prescribed for me intestinal bacteria, dextrose, vitamins, and hormone tablets. For safety's sake, afterwards, I had a very thorough examination by Professor von Bergman, the specialist in internal medicine at Berlin University. He concluded I was not suffering from any organic troubles, but only from nervous symptoms caused by overwork. I slowed down my pace, and my symptoms went away. To avoid offending Hitler, I pretended that I was carefully following Morell's instructions. And since my health improved, I became Morell's showpiece. So quite literally, Hitler says, you gotta go see my guy. You gotta go see my guy. He goes to this doctor, and Morell goes, well, clearly, you know what you need? You need Bulgarian peasant poop. And start prescribing him his pills and hormones and vitamins and all this stuff. And then he goes to a regular doctor, and the doctor goes, no, you're stressed out. Like, I don't know, take a couple of nights off a week. You know, just leave work at work. And he feels better, but he has to pretend. He has to pretend that this quack doctor made him better. Can you imagine him? He's standing in, like, you know, like Hitler's office or whatever, and a little, like, timer on his watch goes off. Whoop, time for my poop pills. Just pulls them out. So good. So good. And Hitler's just like, oh, my boy. I told you he'd get you.
Another miracle.
Another miracle. And I gotta say, yeah, that's the problem of surrounding yourself with yes men.
Yeah.
So, like, and Hitler's even more convinced now that this doctor is the best for him.
Oh, he saved two people now.
He saved two people. He's the best doctor in the world. But the problems with Hitler's health start to get more pronounced, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a well-known quote, is that the best Allied general in World War II was Hitler himself.
Yeah.
Because Hitler was, towards the end, a horrible decision maker.
Yeah.
Right? He wasn't relying on his generals to make tactical decisions.
Yeah.
He was insisting that they hold things they couldn't hold, right? And so all of these mistakes were happening. In fact, there was a plot to assassinate Hitler that was actually canceled. Because the Allies were worried if they did successfully assassinate him, that somebody more competent would take over.
Yeah.
And that the war would drag on. So they were like, literally like, he's running the, I mean, like, we're losing dozens. I mean, and at this point, the Allies don't know about the concentration camps either. So I don't want to imply that the Allies were just like, maybe I'm wrong.
I'm pretty sure they would have known.
Oh, well.
No, they definitely knew.
They definitely, ooh, well, in that case... The Allies made some decisions, and they decided to let Hitler keep running things. I will say this, even if Hitler had been assassinated, the concentration camps probably wouldn't have been shut down. So, anyway. But anyway, they decided to leave Hitler alive because he's running his country into the ground at this point. He's overreached himself in so many places. Rommel's campaign is breaking down in North Africa and all these things. And so there's a lot of people trying to figure out what's wrong with Hitler.
Yeah.
So he gets, there's a bomb attack on June 20th of one of these years. I don't remember which year, but there's a bomb attack. And Hitler gets like a little bit of like damage to his right arm. And so he has two surgeons that are attending him at this point. And I have their names as well. They won't attend him for long, but they are attending him. This is Dr. Brandt and Dr. von Hasselbeck. It was a very German name.
Yeah.
And he also has this ear, nose, and throat doctor that occasionally comes to see him because Hitler gets jaundice at this point, which is a thing when your skin gets yellow. It's like a caused by like a vitamin deficiency or whatever. Yeah. So this Dr. Erwin Geising comes to examine Hitler as well. So there's three doctors that are not Morell that are now examining Hitler to try and, you know, fix his, you know, they're dealing with the shrapnel and his arm, and they're dealing with the jaundice. And so Geising is gone to visit Hitler this, you know, one morning and take care of him and just see how he's doing. And he notices on the bedside table there are six little black pills. And he's like, "What are those?" And Hitler goes, "Oh, those are my anti-gas pills. My doctor prescribes them for me because of a very, very small gas problem." Because very, very light, very normal amount of gas problem. And so these are over-the-counter pills. So these are actually, these are something called Dr. Coaster's anti-gas pills. You could buy these in a little tin, right? Yeah. These are just like, you could buy these over the counter.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Geising, because he knows Morell's a quack, everyone knows Morell's a quack, is like, "What? Let me check on these pills. Let me just make sure these are okay for our supreme leader to be taking."
Yeah.
Because he's getting kind of weird. He's getting kind of irrational.
Yeah.
Everyone's a little nervous about it. So he goes, he finds this tin, he looks on the back, and he finds that the two of the primary ingredients in these pills are strychnine, which is rat poison, and something called belladonna, or deadly nightshade. So he finds that these pills are extremely bad. They're bad for him.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, and they are over-the-counter, right? So these pills, Dr. Morell had been telling Hitler to take two at every meal, right? Hitler, because he's Hitler, was like, we need to keep the gas under control. He's been taking six at every meal. Six tablets every meal. So that's three meals a day.
Yeah.
Three times six is 18. 18 doses of strychnine and rat poison a day. A day this man is taking. And they're like, "I wonder why Hitler feels bad."
Crazy.
He's crazy. And so, you know, so Geising is like, "Well, I need to figure out if these pills are bad. You know, like, is this, you know, because, you know, you can use, there are small amounts of poison in a lot of medicines that we take." He takes a couple for a couple of days, starts to feel like crap immediately, starts to feel awful. And he goes to this Dr. Brandt and Dr. von Hasselbach, right, and tells them everything. And so he goes, so they come as a team, the three of them come, and they go, Führer, popping back his rat poison pills. Yes, what's going on? What's going on, guys? My trusted doctors, my wonderful advisors, taking in rat poison. And they go, "So we have some news about your pills." And so they lay it all out. They explain, "Hey, there's rat poison. There's belladonna in here. You're taking way too many of them. Like, you can't, like, this is really bad for your health." Hitler says, "I myself always thought they were just charcoal tablets for soaking up my intestinal gases. I always felt rather pleasant after taking them." Hitler didn't seem to mind. In fact, he fired all three of them on the spot for daring to question Morell. He said, "Rat poison? Done. Good. I'll take more."
"If it's from my main man.
If it's from my main man, I don't care. I don't care." And so he dismisses both of the surgeons immediately.
Yeah.
Surgeons are immediately dismissed. Geising is a visiting doctor, right? He's just an ear, nose, and throat guy. So he wasn't going to be here forever anyway.
Yeah.
And Hitler just goes, "And thank you so much. Your services are no longer required." Fires all three of them on the spot. Says, nope. "My doctor is the one I trust. I trust this doctor." And so they go to Morell. And a Morell hadn't even read the tin. Hadn't even read the back of the pills. Even though Morell was as stunned as everyone else to learn that he had been medicating the Führer with rat poison.
He gave a pill to the Führer and didn't even read the label. Read the serving size and you say, "Okay, here you go."
Yeah, he literally, so the thing is, this man was a quack. He wasn't a good doctor.
Yeah.
So when the most powerful man in the world came to him, most powerful man in Germany, comes to him and says, "I'm farting a lot." And Morell goes, goes down to his local pharmacy and goes, You know, little, like, yeah. You know, little CBS music's playing in the background. It's just like, Mucinex, Mutaflor, that's mine. That's very good. Dr. Coaster's anti-gas pills. Bingo. We're good. Picks them up from the pharmacy, brings them back to the Fuhrer, and then just goes, all right, great. And then pulls them out and presents them as his own. And just goes, take these. Try these out. And so, yeah, doses him with rat poison, doesn't even check.
Doesn't even realize what he's doing.
And so, it's crazy that he would be dosing him with rat poison.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, here's what's even more crazy, right? This wasn't even half of what he was giving this man.
Oh, no.
This was, no. He was, so people are wondering, why would you stay with a doctor who's giving you rat poison? Three doctors come to you, and they say that your doctor is insane. That he's crazy, he's giving you bad stuff. I mean, they say it gently, but that's the gist. Why would you trust him? The reason he trusts him is because Hitler is more hopped up on methamphetamines than... like, you watched Breaking Bad, more meth was consumed by Hitler than was ever in that show.
Ever produced.
Walter White's got nothing on Dr. Theodore Morell. So
I just imagine he has this massive facility where it's just producing meth.
He does. He's producing. So he's got all these factories. So because he's now Hitler's personal physician, he's bought all these factories with his clout and is now making Mutaflor just hand over fist, just making them, producing so much money. So on average, Hitler was taking 150 pills a week. 150 pills a week. He is, so, because the stress is getting worse, the farting is back, right? The constipation, the diarrhea is back. And so, to his credit, like, you get why Morell is so unconcerned with the gas pill intake. He's like, take them. Great. Take them. And whatever it takes to get you back on. He is constantly giving him sedatives. He's giving him laxatives. He's just giving him whatever he can to manage the constipation and the diarrhea.
Oh,
right?
Because it's like a pendulum, and every day it just keeps swinging
every
back
day
and forth.
It swings back and forth. Like, the Fuhrer wakes up every morning, and he is either blocked or at full blast. And so the doctor is just like, all right, you're going to take some we're going to take some, like, muscle relaxers to help get you going. All right, that's not where, all right, we're going to take some stuff to keep you constipated. You know, and either way, like, he can't win. And so he's constantly dosing him with all this stuff. I have a list of all the medications that he's on. Give me one sec. I'm just going to run through some of the things that he's getting. So let me just pull this up. So I have in front of me a list of 74 substances that Hitler was taking. Psychoactive drugs such as heroines, as well as such as heroin and other commercial poisons are included here. I'm just gonna run through some of the fun stuff. So he's getting bromide and pyrimidine, which is a tranquilizer. This is to counteract the methamphetamines he's taking every morning to wake him up. He is taking Coleman cold and flu medication. He's taking cocaine and adrenaline in the form of eye drops, just to keep him nice and pepped up. Yeah, Hitler was reportedly given powdered cocaine quite often because Hitler said it cleared his sinuses. Soothed his throat. That's another Hitler quote right there.
Oh, that's so...
These are some of the fun Hitler quotes. but eventually, even Morell's like, given Hitler a little bit too much cocaine
and a little bit too much heroin and meth.
Too much heroin.
Like, he's just a druggie at this point.
Hitler is just addicted to drugs. Yeah, and you wonder why things started to spiral out of control.
Yeah.
He is on a constant roller coaster. Some more fun things. He's taking the anti-gas pills, which, to be clear, he was taking a total of like 16 tablets a day, including they include belladonna extract and strychnine. He's taking bile extract, papaverine, caffeine, pancreatine, Feltori. He's taking Eucadol, which is oxycodone, which is a painkiller. And you know what oxys are.
Yeah.
We're currently dealing with the oxy problem.
Yeah.
So Eucadol was actually something that was being used all over Germany at this point. It was what was fueling the German war machine. So Hitler's on oxy, he's on meth, he's on heroin. He's also getting just glucose injections pretty much every day.
We'll talk
more about the injections. Glucose. So, after the Americans interrogate Morell, they're like, so what are you eating these injections? He's like, vitamins. And they're like, what kind of vitamins? He's like, good ones. Refuses to answer what any and anybody in Hitler's inner circle who asks what's in these injections.
Vitamins.
Glucose. He's getting chamomile enemas still, and it is noted here, he is getting chamomile enemas on the patient's personal request. So Hitler requested these chamomile enemas. He's like, it just, you know, really, really puts a pep in the, puts a little pep in the Führer step. Just likes it when he gets tea up his butt. He's getting also, he's getting the mutaflor. He's getting all sorts of animal fats and protein compounds that are putting into him. He's getting bovine testosterone, pituitary gland. This is marketed as an aphrodisiac. Apparently Hitler wanted to be seen as quite virile. And so he's taking bull testosterone as well to try and keep himself up.
You know, to look cool.
He's taking Pervitin, which are just methamphetamine. That's straight methamphetamine injections. This is to fight mental depression and fatigue. Just so you're out there, listeners, I don't know if you suffer from depression. And if you do, please talk to your therapist, talk to your doctor, see if there's any medicines that are right for you. If your doctor recommends meth, don't take it.
That's not a good doctor.
That's not a good doctor.
You should probably leave the alleyway.
Absolutely, absolutely. He is taking extract of seminal vesicles and prostate, which is injected intravenously for mental depression. He's taken all sorts of fun things. I'm just on number 27 of the things that he's taken. That was just 27.
That's not even half.
It's not even half. So this man is on... this man is on so many different medications. He's swinging back and forth. So from the end... Towards the end, a couple of people reported... Because a lot of people were kind of trying to keep up with Hitler towards the end. They say that towards the end, he was suffering from either uncontrolled swings of euphoria and mindless rage. He was either wildly happy or incredibly angry. He was incredibly irrational. His skin had so many injection sites in it that they were having trouble finding places to inject him with.
Oh, it's just like, it's just a bunch of holes.
Just a bunch of holes. Like, he's just covered in pockmarks. So when you inject something, it needs to go into a vein.
Yeah.
So, like, so his veins just all up and down his arm, just covered in track marks.
That's a wicked tattoo.
That's a wicked tattoo. Apparently, towards the end, he could barely walk. He couldn't sit by himself. Aides would have to put chairs underneath him, and then he would kind of plop down into it. He wasn't signing documents anymore. He was rubber stamping them.
His brain is probably just full of... cocaine and bull testicles.
Absolutely. So every morning, so it used to be Morel was just giving him these methamphetamine shots. And when I say methamphetamines, these are his vitamin shots.
Yeah.
Right? So so these are where the meth is coming in. So he's getting these methamphetamine shots. It used to be just before like big speeches or big meetings when he needed a boost. Cut to like, you know, 5 or 6 months later.
Oh no.
Good morning. Good morning. Here's your shot, sir. He's getting a shot of meth every morning to wake him up.
And then he has to take that tranquilizer.
And he has to take the tranquilizer to chill back out towards the end of the day because he can't sleep. And just, so this man is absolutely going nuts. These medications are spinning him left and right. The gas is still a problem, right? And so he, his blind trust in Morel, it never wavers. Not until the very end. So maybe...
It's like the last day and he's like, maybe this was a bad decision.
No. So the reason he finally gives up the ghost on Morel is because things are going really, really badly.
Yeah.
So he has just lost the Battle of Stalingrad. And the Battle of Stalingrad was something that actually could have been tactically, not tactically won, but preserved.
Yeah.
So there were a huge, there were like 6,000 German troops in Stalingrad trying to hold it at one point. I've probably got the numbers wrong. There's maybe 60,000.
There's like... at least, you know, 200,000 people in, like, the Stalingrad area.
Yeah. Well, I have the deets in front of me. Anyway, here, yeah. I will be fast and loose with the numbers. So there's a lot of German troops in Stalingrad holding it. However, just like you were talking about earlier, Stalingrad is being encircled by Russian troops. And once they get cut off, they're going to get starved out.
Yeah.
Right? So these generals start, you know, telegramming and sending messages back to Hitler going, can we retreat? Right? If we pull back out... we can reinforce the capital with the troops that we have.
Yeah.
The men that we have aren't going to die, right? If we get encircled, it's just a matter of time. There's no way to You know what I mean? We can't win once we're encircled.
And that's a massive blow to, like, troops, morale.
It's, absolutely, it's a right? Lot a tactical retreat is much easier to tell people than Stalingrad was encircled, thousands of your countrymen are being starved out. Hundreds of thousands of your countrymen are being starved out and destroyed. So they send all these messages to Hitler. Hitler is, at this point, hopped up on meth. And is now...
Of course. Why hopped up on meth.
Yeah, he's getting his daily injections from Dr. Morell, Walter White of Germany. And so he's getting all these injections, and he goes, no, you can't leave Stalingrad. You know what? You can leave Stalingrad if you can still hold Stalingrad. He gives this weird contradictory order that says, so the regiment can leave it if the regiment can hold it. And so these...
It makes sense.
So these generals are like, I guess we're not pulling out of Stalingrad. They don't put out of Stalingrad.
Yeah, because if they did, like... Oh, that's an execution.
That's treason, yeah. So they don't pull out of Stalingrad, the city gets encircled, thousands of German troops die. Thousands upon thousands of German troops die. The city is taken, they're all captured, 6,000 of them get sent off to gulags and Russian prison camps, where most of them die.
Yeah.
Huge blow, Stalingrad is a failure, and at this point, the war is pretty much lost, right? Yeah. They're being pushed on from all sides, it's the last kind of days of the war. I mean, the Battle of Stalingrad is just one of those examples. It didn't happen right at the end of the war, but...
Yeah, like, it was kind of, in the middle, but it was a big blow, and then would set up the dominoes for, the collapse.
Absolutely. So, all these people have pulled back to Berlin... The fighting is not yet in the city, but the city is defending itself. So the last couple of planes are fleeing, and so all the high command, they want to flee to the Bavarian Alps. They want to flee to the mountains, right? And they're like, we can hold out with the remnants of our military for many, many more years. They'll have to, if we can set up a stable enough position, we can force some sort of peace.
Yeah,
we can force
some sort of treaty. Guerrilla warfare.
Yeah, they're like, it's not over. And Hitler is at this point... full crazy.
Yeah.
He just goes, no, it's over. We've lost. So here's what we're going to do. We're all going to stay here in Berlin. We're going to fight to the last man. And just before they take me, I'm going to shoot myself. Like, this is the plan.
Yeah.
He tells them. He's like, I'm going to suicide. Me and Ava are going to get married. We're going to suicide. You're all going to fight here to the last man with me.
I'm going to kill my dog as well.
I'm going to kill my dog. We're all going to defend ourselves to the very last man, except for me. I'm not going to do any shooting.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot myself. And so... all the high command is very dissatisfied with this.
Because
they don't want to die. They're like, there are military forts we could hold in the Bavarian Alps. There are planes on the tarmac. Let's go.
Yeah.
And so Hitler is increasingly paranoid and suspicious at this point. He has decided on his plan, and he's not pulling back. So he's so suspicious and paranoid that he believes that Morell is working with high command. He believes that Morell is going to sedate him. They're going to drug Hitler and, like, drag him onto this plane. Like, wrap him up on a thing and drag him on this plane so they can keep fighting. And so Morell comes to him one day and is like, good morning, it's time for your meth, And Hitler goes, put it down, put it on the table. You're fired, get out of here. And Morell's like, what? And Hitler goes, you're working with them. And he's full paranoid breakdown and says, leave all your stuff here. I'll just give myself the injections
until
the end. And Morell goes... well, it's been a pleasure working for you, Herr Hitler. I'm going to go get on the plane, and I'm going to flee. So a bunch of high command dips.
Yeah.
They just leave. They flee, Morell goes with them, and that's kind of where Hitler's story ends, because they get, his valet, his personal, valet starts giving him the injections every day. And of course, he's watched Morell do it. So a couple of days later, the bombs drop on the Führer bunker. Eventually, the Russian troops encircle the city. They take everything. Hitler pops himself and his girlfriend, Eva Braun, after they get married. And then that's the end of the story for Hitler. Morell gets captured a few months later, July of that year, by Americans who start interrogating him. And that's where we get all this information.
Where'd he flee?
So he went with the high command to the Alps.
Okay.
But once Hitler was taken and the war was over, there was no reason to hold on.
Yeah, there's no point.
Because the people that were fanatically dedicated to the cause were dedicated to Hitler.
Yeah, and now that he's gone, you're gonna root behind.
Goering isn't going to be able to take over. Goering could have taken over, maybe when there was still a Germany to consolidate into. But now there's nothing. So people start descending from the hills. The Allies are running these big missions to capture anybody who's still out there. And of course, Operation Paperclip is going on. So all these Nazi scientists and tacticians are being scooped up by various sides. So the Soviets are pulling some. The Americans are pulling some. Morell gets caught up in these investigations because he's Hitler's personal doctor.
Yeah, that's like target number one to start asking what went on.
Yeah, so they pull him and they start interrogating him. And even in the American notes, this man is an idiot. This man is fat and disgusting and he smells bad and we hate him.
And like, we're American, but this guy's too greasy for
us. None of us have had a burger in months and none of us want one anymore because he smells terrible. Like, so they hate him, too. And in one of the interviews, they literally put up, they go, this man has nothing more to add that another doctor could not easily tell us. I mean, they get the list of, like, medications. And, and it, you know, all this information gets disseminated.
They just had this list of, like, he was doing five different drugs that are, what?
Yeah. He was doing how much meth? A lot of meth?
How much heroin?
Cocaine? He was what? He was rubbing it on his gut? What?
Oxycodone?
Oxycodone? This man was an oxy boy? So he gets, you know, he gets captured by the Americans. They note in the interview that he smells awful and is an idiot. He is obviously not scooped up by anybody. They're like, we can leave this guy behind.
He poses no threat to us.
He's also suffering from pretty bad like health problems at this point.
Well, I mean, if he's following his own regimen, that makes sense.
This man's taking a couple of Belgian poop pills every day. Yeah. He's trying to, you know, he's taking a little bit of meth to keep himself going. So, no, he's in pretty bad shape. He gets put into, so here's a little thing that's kind of sad. So a lot, not sad, but a lot of the concentration camps, when the Allies first got them, when they first captured them, you know, and, like, took over them, they didn't just, like, open the doors and be like, be free, you know? Like, I always had this idea, maybe you didn't, when the Allies would capture concentration camps, they just kind of, like, they're axing down doors, and they're like, get out of here, be free, you know, go back to your homes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They opened the doors, they said, oh, God. You guys are in terrible shape. Let's get some food and medicine in here. And so people were like, great, can we go? No. We got to figure out what to do with you. Right?
Because you can't really just let...
You can't just let them out. Because where are they going to go? They're going to die.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And like their homes are probably gone.
Their homes have been burned and taken. So all these people, they're not technically prisoners anymore, but they're still at these concentration camps.
They're technically being like held at the prison though.
They're being held at these prisons. Obviously, like the ownership has changed, and so these horrific scientific monstrosities are not happy anymore.
Yeah.
People aren't just being shot anymore, but they're still being held there. And guess who's also being held in these prisons, these camps? All the captured Nazis.
Oh, no.
All the captured Nazis, because they've got all these prisons ready to go. So they just start putting them in. So Morell and a bunch of other scientists are actually put in a concentration camp. And they're not obviously being killed, but they're being held there. So he's held there for a couple of years. Excuse me, for a couple of months. He's in release. He dies like 2 years later on a hospital bed of like heart problems.
Yeah.
And so ends his story. but... That is the way the news goes. That was the end of Hitler the Meth Tater. yeah, that was what happened to him. And then, you know, and of course, after the war, all these different things go down. All these, you know, all these scientists get taken over. We start racing to the moon, you know, with all these scientists working for us, the Americans do. But it doesn't actually come out. We actually only got his medical records released just a couple of years ago.
It's actually fascinating what happened, like, once... like, the U.S. and the Allies got all these, you know, soldiers and stuff. Because once the Cold War kind of started, they're like, hey, who knows more about fighting the Soviets than these guys? So they just started squeezing them for, like, all the information they could get, right? But the problem was that these guys were Nazis, mm-hmm. right? So it created, like, an extremely warped sense of, like, the Nazis and... you know, how the war went in general, right? Because, you know, that's where it gets rumors of, like, oh, the Tiger? Yeah, invulnerable. could not die, could take out 100 Shermans, greatest tank ever.
When it wasn't a good tank, the Germans were just,
It was an alright tank.
It was fine.
Yeah, like, it could do the job, especially while defending, but it wasn't like this, you know, godly vehicle.
It certainly wasn't a godly vehicle. There are some tanks, oh my gosh, we'll have to get into tank warfare sometime. I know you listeners are excited to hear about tank warfare.
Yeah.
But there are some tanks, golly, I would not want to work in a tank. So here's a fun thing. Do you know why, do you know most British tanks come equipped with the ability to make tea inside of them?
That's cool.
They do. They have little kettles inside. And when they were first building tanks, you know why they're called tanks?
Because they're like water tank. Like, well, there's a few theories, right?
There's a few things. I mean, this is just an urban myth that I'm spouting here. I ain't got the stats.
For what I know, mm-hmm. right? It was because, you know, sneaky, right? If you call something a tank, it makes sense why it has a lot of, you know, metal and screws and whatever. So you could call it a water tank. You know, a spy gonna look at that and just like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yeah, they were worried that the people who were building it would leak the information.
Yeah.
So they told them to make reinforced water tanks, right? And so all the designs are labeled water tanks. Until eventually, they're like, all right, now put some wheels on that shit.
Yeah, you know, maybe like a bit of tracks and like a spoiler.
All right, and then attach a gun. Yeah. People are like, we're putting water in this?
Well, but you gotta protect the water.
Right? We gotta protect the water. It's very valuable water. All right, so let me just see. Goodness gracious. I think this has been a wonderful episode, don't you, dear listeners? Yes, I think it went well as well. So I want to say thank you so much, Rafi. This has been wonderful. Did you have a good time?
Yes, thank you for having me. It was great.
Thank you for coming to talk with me about this.
Like the Bulgarian poop pills, yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, you and me are going to go pick up some Mutiflora right after this. You know what? Sometimes I pass gas, and I was thinking, you know, I think they sell rat poison right down there.
Yeah, we could just, like, go down the street right now.
I don't think they sell it at the pharmacy. We're going to have to go to Ace, but I bet they've got it. But I wanted to say thank you all so much for listening, folks. Thank you so much to our special guest, Rafi Phillips, who did a wonderful job. If you like the show, please share it with your friends, share it with your people, and then, you know, tune back in to listen again. We've got a great back stock of other episodes that you can listen to. This is our Christmas episode, I guess. So, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a Merry New Year. I am Asher Brooks, and this has been Haunted History. Thank you so much for listening.